The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all other purchases.
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Will the NBA return in 2020? And when is the drop-dead date to find an answer to that question? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation at 888-729-3776. Coming up in this hour, I'll let you know when and if I think sports returns in 2020. We pick our best movie from the genre of psychological thrillers, and we set the record straight on what exactly is going down between Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys. But joining me now on the phone line is ESPN NBA front office insider Bobby Marks. Bobby, how are you, man?
Hey, Will. How are you?
I'm good. Do you think there's a drop-dead date here for making a decision on whether or not there will be a return to the 2020 NBA season? And if there is, when is it?
I actually don't think there is right now, because I think the league, is content on playing in December, end of December, no matter if there is a season, or even if there is a season. I don't think the league is saying, hey, we need to decide by June because it's going to impact 2021, our start date in October. I think the mindset all along is that, we're going to be playing in the start is going to be late December, and we can stretch this out and play in possibly, August, September. Maybe not October, but I don't think there's a drop dead date right now.
Well, back that up for me if we can for a moment. If we say August and September is when the sweet spot of an NBA schedule might be, or when it would come to its conclusion, what kind of season would it be? What's the most likely outcome? Is it to skip ahead straight to the playoffs? Is it to finish off the regular season? Is it to abbreviate the playoffs? What's the most likely scenario in your mind right now for how the season concludes?
I think the most likely scenario for me is that we get right into the playoffs and that we do some type of play-in game where, if you're the 7th seed, you're playing the 10th seed, and if you're the 8th seed, you're playing the 9th seed. And then we go into that and keep the playoffs in whole where we have 7-game series. And I think you can get that all in, because if you are in one site, if it's Orlando or if it's Las Vegas, you technically could play every other day because there's no travel involved. I think the hard question is that, well, are you come as teams like the Lakers and Milwaukee, most of these teams, are we just going to jump right into the playoffs without any, is there a preseason game we can play? Is there any type of tune-up here? I know they mentioned, between 3 and 6 weeks as far as some type of training camp. I think it's probably more realistically, in that 3 to 4 week range. But what happens between camp and the start of the playoffs? I think certainly playing 3 or 4 games gives you that buffer. But again, it comes back to, are we going to bring back all 30 teams, especially teams that have not, don't have a chance to play in the playoffs, to play go through camp for a month and then play 3 games? And that's kind of the big question that I have.
You're talking about the teams that would be in for the play-in spots into the playoffs?
No, I'm talking about teams like Golden State and Detroit and, some of those teams that have basically been eliminated right now. Is the league going to have them come back, go through a 4-week mini camp, and then just play 3 or 4 games, and then you're basically done until, the end of December?
I can't see that, right? And that doesn't seem to make
any sense. That's hard, yeah.
Especially if your idea is what we might be headed towards, which is jump straight ahead to the playoffs. You're looking at half the NBA going, okay, we're done right now. We're already – and by the way, I think Steve Kerr has said the Warriors are proceeding as though that's the case, like they're already in their off season, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think because teams are forced right now to focus on the offseason because of the draft or get friends in a row, your ducks in a row, is that even playoff teams are forced to kind of focus on the offseason. And just the transition of going from okay all and I know Golden State came out to be good partners here, but for me, it doesn't make sense, you know, certainly that you're going to have a team come back and play three games and, you know, do it just to, you know, for the sake of, you know, for the sake of playing here. And then they're done, as I said, for, you know, what, 5-6 months.
ESPN NBA front office insider Bobby Marks here on the Will Cain Show. So, Bobby, I've started to see stories, and I don't presume that this is unanimous, but that there's among NBA players, there's concern for safety, and not a lot, or I don't know how to qualify or quantify this, but there are some that don't want to come back. Bottom line, they don't want to come back. They don't want to play. Now, I don't know if those are guys exclusively on teams that have already been eliminated or where that is, but the NBA is a league, not unlike Major League Baseball, where the players have a ton of say, the NBA Players Association. Do you think that the players will get behind a proposal to bring the NBA back in 2020?
I do, because I think if there is no season and this gets canceled and then we're waiting to December, you know, the NBA kind of gets lost in the shuffle here, right? I mean, it becomes like the unknown league in that you're waiting until into the end of December. I think a couple of things here. I think, you know, starting Friday, there's, you know, the economics of it. There's their pay starts getting reduced. So I think we've got 100 guys that are going to lose at least $100,000 starting on this Friday here. So that is a factor. Teams that are in the playoffs or even without in the playoffs. I think that, you know, of course the health factor here. And I think the commissioner laid it out perfectly on the conference call with the players is that this virus is going to be with us until there's a vaccine. And that might not be till, December or January or even February here. And it's a matter of what is the tolerance level going to be? What is the risk factor? How do we mitigate against the risk factor here? And you know, there's risk in everything, right? There's risk in me getting in my car and driving to Publix down here in the supermarket. I mean, we go through risk every day. And I think if the league just wants to shut it down, then fine, so be it, and wait until December and in January. But there's big-time financial cost there. And I think eventually we do have to get back to some type of normalcy here, along as there's some testing in place. I think if you can test players every day, if there's a game to be played and we know who's testing positive and we can kind of quarantine players and the league doesn't have to shut down, I think that you know, eliminates some of the risk there.
Bobby Marks here on the Will Cain Show. I've seen the stat now that I can't believe the number's this high, Bobby. I don't know why I'm surprised by this, but 40% of the league's revenue comes from the in-game experience. So that's what I think Adam Silver said on the call on Friday with the NBA Players Association. So that's ticket sales, that's concessions, that's merchandising, whatever happens at games. It makes up 40% of the league's revenue. I don't think any proposals right now consider bringing fans back into the stadium. It's putting the games on, but in empty stadiums. So we're talking about a loss 40%. As a best case scenario right now, at least for the 2020 season, what impact is that going to have long term on the league?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. I mean, I think it's you know, how they project the cap out each year is basically taking the revenue from this current season, and that's basically your barometer. So if you're looking at a 40% drop in ticket sales or in revenue for next year, that means revenue goes down from about $8 billion to $5 billion. Maybe we can get to $6 billion. So I think what the league and the player association have to figure out is kind of like, is this a one-time thing, right? Is this going to be, you know, the 2021 season as far as a financial loss, and then things become back to normal in 21-22? Because by the letter of the CBA, yeah, I mean, the cap is going to nosedive here. I mean, the cap will drop down to $95 million. And we'll have 25 teams in a luxury tax, and nobody will be able to spend money. But, you know, there is a way to kind of artificially put the cap at a certain number so we don't see a huge cap spike here. But it's a huge number. I think the one thing what you'll see will possibly happen is that players can have 10% of their salaries withheld in an escrow account that's been going on right now. I think that number goes up to 25%. I think that's the most logical solution. So that gives owners and teams $1 billion in a fund for next season, that in case revenue does become short and that players receive more, that teams will be able to recover some of that. But you're going to see a lot of proposals in the next couple of weeks because, as I said, we're basically going to have years of negotiation for a CBA basically squeezed into like 2 or 3 months here.
Right. Because, I mean, We'll end on this, Bobby, but the NBA just extended the CBA's ability to cancel its season through force majeure until what they do? Until September 1, was it? Something like that?
Yeah, they added another 60 days here. So that gives you some time to basically negotiate an amendment to the CBA. I don't see basically this whole thing getting ripped up, but it gives you the time to go and mend the mechanics of what's going to happen next.
That's what's going to be my question. Do they just end up ripping the CBA up? We're starting from scratch when it comes to NBA, but they've got 2 months to essentially negotiate something that works, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, we do. I mean, the interesting too is that, the players have an opt out and both sides have an opt out after 2022-23. So, hey, that's only 3 years. I mean, basically. So do we just scrap it and start from anew? But as I said, when you negotiate a CBA, it's years in the works. I mean, to try to get this in 2 months, it's a big ask. So I think we're going to probably see, some type of side letter to here that will tweak the mechanics of the cap.
All right. It's ESPN NBA Front Office Insider Bobby Marks here on The Will Cain Show. Thanks, Bobby.
Thanks, Will.
What was the best movie? We've done worst, and Pat lost again. With Shutter Island, what was the best movie picked among everybody here on their homework assignment for best psychological thriller? That's coming up on The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Kevin in North Carolina, you're on The Will Cain Show.
Will, you are and have always been absolutely right on Dak being better than Wentz. I used to be a doubter, but as always, you're correct. That's because you have a monopoly on the truth.
Thank you.
I'm going to give you an illustration. I'm going to explain why his nickname is Commercial Break Nuno. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Right when we were coming out of commercial break, all the guys were busting his chops about the fact that Nuno has a thanks for playing score on our movie homework assignments throughout the coronavirus stay home orders. This is what it looks like right now. Every weekend, we nominate a certain category of movies for our homework. We watch all five, come back, and vote who nominated the worst and who nominated the best of the given genre. Right now, the standings look like this here. Mike's won twice, I've won twice, and Bubba's won twice. Nuno and Pat, zeros. But Bubba has got last twice, Pat's got last twice, Mike's got last twice, I've got last once. Nuno, zero. And Rob, we're coming back from commercial break. You had an unfinished thought, Nuno. Do you want to go ahead and finish that?
This whole thanks for playing thing, is I've had two weeks where we were tied, and then what happened? One time he went to the callers, and, Mike stacked his deck against me, and I lost, right? And then the other time, you ended up voting for the other, it was tied 2-2 or something of that nature, and you voted against me. So it's just thanks for playing thing. It's just not all true.
I love that you think I would stack the deck against you as opposed to Will.
You have won how many times?
Because it was you.
How many times you won,
Nuno?
How many times you won?
As many times as I lost.
That's right. You are the definition of third place. Hey, something else I almost said. Hey, Bubba, I like that song coming in. But then I realized about 20 seconds in, that's Wild Bill's or Buffalo Bill or whatever his name was. That's when he was naked dancing around in the cellar, right?
Correct.
Yep. Silence of the Lambs.
Sure is. Goodbye, horses. That was a great bring back from that movie.
Did you say what? Tuck? What'd you say?
What?
I swear you said the word tuck. I guarantee you did. I 100% what? Guarantee you did.
All right, Larry, relax.
We're going to get that sound in just a moment. All right, the nominations for Best Psychological Thriller were these. Mike A., Silence of the Lambs. Bubba, 7. Will, Gone Girl. Nuno, Fight Club. And Pat, Shutter Island. In the first hour of the show, Pat got last place. That was decided. Despite the fact I voted for myself, Gone Girl, to get last. So it doesn't look like I'm going to be winning this category this week. Pat obviously is not. He'll be drafting first next time. But who's going to be picking the genre? Well, we're going to find out in just a moment because we'll see who won Best Psychological Thriller. I am going to ask Nuno who he is voting first. Wait, guys, what are the odds he picks Fight Club, his nomination?
I think it's pretty high. I mean, yeah,
every time.
No, so here's the deal, right? I do believe that Fight Club is probably the best rewatchable movie that, like, if it's on and you're skimming through, you're going to stop and watch it. But I will say that the best psychological thriller, unfortunately, was Silence of the Lambs.
Unfortunately, because Mike A., or unfortunately for another reason?
No, unfortunately because of Mike A.
Your analysis of Fight Club is correct because if you're flipping through channels and if it's on and you're saying I'm only going to watch for 15 minutes, it's a good one to watch. But to sit down and do the whole 2 hours again, I like the theme of Fight Club. That was my favorite thing. Like, I do want to give everything up. Like, I'm done with this commercialism, consumerism. Like, that's what got me. Like, why do you need a new duvet? I bought it when it came out in 97 or whenever it came out, and I buy it again today. That stuff, I don't care how juvenile, I like it a lot. Bubba? What is your vote?
All right. I will have to agree with Nuno. I think, like I said earlier, I enjoyed them all, but I think Fight Club 7 and Silence are on their own separate level. I do agree Fight Club is just a great movie. It's deep, a lot of things going on. But as far as psychological thrillers, I think 7 and Silence of the Lambs are the top two, and I think Silence of the Lambs is still king. It's the number one.
Okay.
What was Pat's vote?
Nope. I'm going to vote next.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to vote next. I can feel how this is going. All right. I think Gone Girl and Shutter Island were the bottom two. I think Nuno once again solidified his spot in third place with Fight Club, as always. And I think it came down to 7 versus Silence of the Lambs. Here's what I would say. I am not 100% sure Silence of the Lambs qualifies as a psychological thriller. Like, this, who was the character who was questioning their reality? Is it Clarice Starling? Like, a psychological thriller has to be where you're questioning your sanity, what's unfolding, the viewers sitting there going, what's real and what's not.
Who was all doing the movies, that in Gone Girl?
All the movies did that, except for Silence of the Lambs. Am I the only one that saw that? I mean, it was tense, it was a thriller, it was a serial killer, but was it really a psychological thriller?
Dr. Lecter is a doctor of what?
Oh, that's what qualifies it? Because he was a psychiatrist?
No, I'm just making sure that, you know, we're...
Am I the only one, Bubba, Nuno, that had some questions about whether or not Silence of the Lambs is in the same genre as the others?
I mean, I think if you're using that specific, you know, as the category is the reason, I would say it's not. But I do think it's... There's a lot of...
It's different than the other. There's a lot of
gray area because it's not a very easily definable. But when you Google psychological thrillers, one of the first things that comes up is Silence of the Lambs as a psychological.
I'm just saying, Mike, if you were playing that game they used to play on Sesame Street, which these kids is doing his own thing, and you had those five movies, you would say Silence of the Lambs is doing his own thing. Am I right?
I don't know that.
I mean, Dr. Lecter literally got multiple MIGs to eat his own tongue. By using psychology.
Okay. Even though I do have some questions that Silence of the Lambs is a neat fit in the genre, that didn't affect my vote. My vote is 7. I enjoyed 7 the most. Again, by the way, Silence of the Lambs was great, and I watched it, and I was like, this thing holds up. It's really good. But I just like 7 a lot. It's just well done. I love the whole 7 Deadly Sins thing. I thought Pitt and Freeman were a great match with each other. I vote 7, number 1. What was Pat's vote?
All right, Pat's vote is in, and he is going to go with The Silence of the Lambs.
And Mike A. was the person who nominated Silence of the Lambs, so outside of me, it looks like it's a clean sweep.
I told you guys on Friday, it's one of my favorite movies. I wrote a 20-page paper on it in college. It's absolutely Silence of the Lambs. Although Seven holds up a lot better than I thought it would, and it was in consideration. It was between those two. But
I did not deserve to get Seven as the fifth pick. Let's put it that way.
Hey, did you feel like Seven felt like a much more modern movie than Silence of the Lambs? Silence of the Lambs held up, but it felt older, did it not? And there's only 4 years difference in those movies. Silence of the Lambs 91, Seven was 95. But yet something about Seven felt way – Silence of the Lambs felt like Hunt for Red October. We've done a couple of these early 90s, late 80s. If the pacing of it's a little slower, you know what I mean?
By the way, did you guys notice that the bad guy wins in all five movies?
Definitely in Gone Girl, definitely in Silence of the Lambs, definitely
– The only question becomes Shutter Island, who you define as the bad guy.
Right. Gone Girl, the bad guy won. Yeah. Did the bad guy win in Fight Club, or did he kill off Tyler Durden?
No. What was Tyler Durden's goal? It happened.
Yeah.
What he wanted to happen, it happened.
I guess bad guys win psychological thrillers. Okay, there's your winner. It's Silence of the Lambs. That means Mike A. is picking the category next week, and Pat is drafting first. Coming up, I increasingly think there is one league that is not going to make it back in 2020 from the coronavirus pandemic. I'll tell you which league it is next on The Will Cain Show.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
I have one sport I'm increasingly pessimistic on its ability, its willingness to return in 2020. I'll tell you which sport it is in just a moment here on The Will Cain Show, reminding you that you can listen to the show on your smart speaker by asking it to play ESPN Radio, or you can ask your local ESPN Radio station by name. Let me hit the phone lines for a moment where I've got Ralph in New York. What's up, Ralph?
Hey, what's up, Will? I have a question in regards to Prescott. I know how you feel about the situation, but do you think he's worth the big contract, the over 40, the better than Russell Wilson?
Well, those are two different things. Not over 40. Nobody's getting paid anything like that. That would be a massive jump, you know? Over 40 would.
Well,
I mean, Russell Wilson's making 35.
He's saying that he wants to be paid more than Russell Wilson, which, in my opinion, is absolutely – I was so mad when the Rams gave Jared Goff all that money. I was like, what? When Baltimore gave Flacco – 3 years, by the way – massive contract, and he's not even with the Ravens anymore. Right. Stafford's a different story. They gave it to him last year. But Stafford is elite. Prescott's not. Right? He's not. So, okay. And you look at his statistics the last 4 years, 15,000 passing yards, 97 touchdowns. Okay, great. But it's not more than Russell Wilson. Let's be real here with ourselves. Right?
Okay. All right. Let me talk now, Ralph. Okay, couple of things. Let's narrow this down. $40 million. Let's throw that out. That's nonsense. More than Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson's at $35 million. Would I be comfortable paying him more than $35 million? I would. Do I think that Dak is worth it? I do. I think that Dak is. Look, at this point, everybody thinks I'm a fanboy, and that's the way it is. But I also see legit. I've watched every play of Dak's career. I've seen what he's been able to accomplish. I've seen how much the game he puts on his own shoulders. In other words, how much he's carrying. And I see exactly the advanced metrics that say how good Dak is. So this idea that Stafford, and by the way, I'm a Stafford defender, is better than Dak? No, he hasn't been for several years. And Stafford's not elite. I don't know what your definition of elite is, but I'd say elite is definitely top three, maybe top five. So I wouldn't put either of them in that category just yet, although Dak is closer than Stafford is. On every available metric, completion percentage, downfield passing, all this crap about dink and dunk Dak, it's nonsense. It's just narrative. It's crap. It's not real. He is one of the most efficient and accurate passers on passes over 20 yards downfield in the NFL. I think he's in the top three. He has some of the least garbage time stats of any quarterback in the NFL. He has one of the highest expected completion percentages of any quarterback in the NFL. And the only way that a guy like Dan Orlovsky ever, and he just, Mike A. is sending me stuff about him tweeting over and over again, is if you relegate it to simply 2019 stats, good competition versus bad competition. Dak did not play up to his level against good competition in 2019. But career as a whole, absolutely I feel comfortable paying him. He is, I would say, objectively seventh, eighth best quarterback in the NFL right now, and I think he'll go higher. I'm comfortable paying that guy. Seth in Missouri, what's up, man? You're on the Will Cain Show.
Hey, thanks, Will, for taking my call. By the way, I think you have a great taste in movies.
Thank you.
So, with that being said, I was going to say with the asterisk and everything, for any sport right now that's playing, I think there are only two reasons why there should be an asterisk next to whoever wins, and that's either if the team, if a team is completely obliterated due to the virus, and also if the organization failed to open up organizations at the exact same time for practices and such due to unfair competitive advantages.
All right, man, I appreciate the call. Mike Tomlin of the Pittsburgh Steelers is suggesting something similar. We all need to be able to come back at the same time. It's an unfair competitive advantage if some teams come back earlier than others. I think we tend to look back on history and flatten it out. That's why we don't really put asterisks next to anybody and their championship. I don't think anybody does that in their strike-shortened seasons. I don't think in any sport, really. Hockey, baseball, the NFL. I don't think we put asterisk. That's a really difficult word for me to say. Asterisk. Hey, speaking of that, did Booger McFarland call me Larry earlier? Do you have that?
I think he did, Lawrence.
I don't think he did. Bubba, you say he said later, not Larry, right?
Well, that's what I thought at first, because I was like, I mean, it's insane. Why would he say that? I thought he said anytime later, but upon further review, I mean, it sounds like he called you Larry.
Let me hear.
Anytime later.
Well, you've really narrowed it down there. There's not much context.
You don't need any more. It's just you being awkward because he called you Larry and you know it.
No.
You kind of go, okay, man. See you, talk to you later.
Why would he call me Larry? There's no Larry hosts.
Listen, my Lawrence, dad's name, I don't know why
my dad's name
you
was Larry, but I don't think he knows that. Let me hear it again.
Anytime, Larry.
I mean, we were saying before, if he was going to say anytime later, you gotta kind of change your cadence. And he did. Anytime, he just went right through. Anytime, Larry.
I think he just clipped off later. Anytime, Larry.
No, you would say, like, anytime later, you would change up the way you're saying it.
Listen, I did want to say one thing to you, Big Lair, about your movie choices. You know, you are the best one at being self-aware, because you have voted yours worst twice, as opposed to Nuno, who votes his best every time, Big Larry.
I have a monopoly on the truth, and that's how you get it, Mike, by being hard on yourself, just like everybody
else.
Then
you'll admit he called you Larry.
He did not. I'm going to text him, and I'm going to ask him, did you call me Larry? Okay, I will text him and ask him. Thank you for that, Mike. I have voted myself last twice.
I appreciate the integrity, Big Larry.
But I don't know if is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because, like, why are you picking so many bad movies?
What are you talking about? I've won as many as you have. We both have won twice. But I am showing my vote has integrity. Have you ever voted yourself last, Bubba?
Yeah.
I
voted Norm last.
Oh, you did one time.
And
that
might be it, because that was the only other time I voted Blackhawk down when I got last.
New note, have you ever voted yourself last? We all know the answer to that.
No, because I haven't suggested any or nominated any movie that deserves to finish last.
Yeah.
This is the first time he's voted himself second best.
Yeah. It's because he's like, you know, yesterday my boys, we did a race. We did there's a big hill out front, and we ran up and down the hill, right? And I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to jog up the hill, then we're going to walk up the hill. Then we're going to jog up the hill, and then we're going to walk up the hill. On the fifth one, we're going to all out sprint up the hill. And the only way you're going to know if you are all out sprinting, besides just trusting your body, is, are you trying to beat everybody else here? Like, this is a competition. Here we go. And we all took off, and of course, I blew them away. You know, what are you going to do? Oh, I mean, they're little. I smoked them. But I turned around, and my younger son was winning, and my older son grinded it at the last minute to catch up. And then they got an argument about whether or not it was a tie. And my older son, it was a tie. And my younger son goes, in the end, who even cares if it's a tie? What a loser's mentality to even try to argue for the tie. It's a win or it's a loss. That's really all that matters. And I'm like, dang it. Life lessons from the younger. But the reason I think of that, Nuno, is because that's how you're playing this game. You're playing for the tie. You're playing for third place on these movies. You don't want to get last and you don't want to get first. You just want to make sure you get
not.
A big zero on the scoreboard.
Again, the problem is, I probably choose the most rewatchable movies where, you know, you stop, you see it on, you're going to watch it. Whereas, you know, these, you guys are choosing the, like, the best in that genre. Like, and that's where, you know, where I'm losing because of that.
That makes zero sense, what you just said.
What? I feel like every time he sets it up, too, when he makes his pick, he's like, all right, I'm just going to make it easy, guys. I'm just going to go with movie X. Because he's just, every time he makes his pick. That's what he said for Fight Club this time.
I mean, this is too much work.
All right, guys, I'm just going to make it easy on you guys. I'm going to go Fight Club.
Yes.
All right.
Was I wrong? Like, this is way too much work. Two and a half hour movies.
What are you doing? What are we really cramping your style on?
I got a big nap to take.
Are you all stressed from work, like Pat?
And then this weekend, Bundesliga is supposed to start. Here we go.
Okay. All right. You got a big, heavy social calendar that's just really impeding. We got it. All right. Coming up, the one sport that I'm really concerned will not make it back in 2020. That's next on the Will Cain Show.
Anytime, Leonard.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
There's one league I'm concerned will not make it back in 2020. It's Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Last week we talked to you about sports that make it back are ones that management makes almost unilateral decisions over labor, where employers, billionaires, make decisions that millionaires have to follow. I think you saw a perfect example of that this past weekend in the UFC. Dana White and the UFC took control, and they said, we are going to put on an event, and they put everything in place they could to ensure that event went off, and went off with maximal safety precautions. One of the fighters did test positive, along with two in his camp. They were quarantined and isolated from the rest of the fighters involved in UFC 249, and the event went on. I think you're going to see something similar in the NFL, where, quite honestly, billionaires make the decisions that millionaires follow. But other leagues where players' unions have much more power are going to have a hard time coming back. I think the best way to characterize this conversation is, as we talked about, with the knowledge that it is hard to rule by consensus in a crisis. That was what Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby had said. And one of the leagues is going to have to rule by consensus much more than others is the NBA. I am getting increasingly pessimistic that the NBA will be able to make it back in 2020. Charles Barkley was on the Dan Le Batard show this morning, and he was asked about the fact that Shaquille O'Neal recently said they ought to just go ahead and scrap the season. Scrap 2020 and do what you can to come back in 2021. Charles Barkley told Dan Le Batard that he agreed with that. He said it first, in fact, that he thought this season should just be shut down. That's too dangerous. Brian Windhorst, ESPN's NBA insider, was on Darian Mel this weekend, and he said, this is all about measuring risk. And right now, I'll tell you, the players are the ones talking about the risk maybe being too high. Here's Brian Windhorst.
You can talk to experts. You can talk to finance guys. You can talk to facilities guys. It bottom line, it comes down to where are you comfortable with taking risk? This is going to be something that is going to be on the plate of every commissioner. Where is your line of risk? The line of risk that Dana White is willing to accept, for example, is different than the line of risk that Adam Silver is willing to accept. And that's what's going to come down to. Where can the NBA get to a risk profile that it's comfortable with. And right now, not only is it nowhere close to having an answer to that, it's nowhere close to even starting to have an answer to that.
And it's because Adam Silver has to take into account not just his risk tolerance. Dana White can make that almost unilaterally, but he has to take into account the NBA players' risk tolerance. And that's not just one or two players. That's the entire league. That is a league where millionaires have much more power over billionaires than any other league. And right now you're hearing more often players saying, or you're hearing reports of players saying behind the scenes, they're not excited. They have great concerns. They're not ready to come back. Now, I'm sure there are many that are. I'm sure there are some that are in the title hunt who want to come back and finish off that fight. But how do you bring that consensus together in the NBA? Of all the leagues out there, including baseball, who has a very powerful players union, I believe basketball is the one that runs the greatest risk of not making it back in 2020. We talked to ESPN front office insider Bobby Marks a little bit earlier on the show, and he said they can push 2021 season all the way into December, giving them August, September, October, perhaps, wherein to finish the 2020 season. But this issue of where do I draw the line of risk? Who's going to make the decision? Who's going to be held accountable? Who's going to all come together in one direction to make sure it happens? The NBA is going to have the hardest time answering all those questions. And in my mind, the NBA is going to be one of the least likely to come back in 2020. The NCAA president, Mark Emmert, recently said that college football and college sports are not going to come back unless college students are on campus. This affirms something that we heard from several college presidents a couple of weeks ago. He's saying that students have to be on campus. Herm Edwards was on First Take, and he said he's unsure how college football can make this work.
We all want to go out there, put our feet in the water, but what is this going to look like? Remember, there's 100 college football players on both sidelines. 100. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of young men with coaches. That's approximately 150 people on both sides. That's 300 people just on the sideline, up in the press boxes. How do we make this work?
It's a hard question to answer. I think college football, by the way, after the NBA, is one of the other most vulnerable sports to coming back a year from now. That, by the way, you know Herm now is Arizona State head coach, who is speaking, someone who's going to be involved in those decision-making processes. Anybody, any institution, take sports out of it, your business, my business, politics, any institution that has to rule by consensus right now is going to have a hard time making quick, decisive, risk-tolerant actions. It's going to be incredibly difficult. I think there's no coincidence we saw UFC come back first. I'm not even telling you what's right or wrong. That's not a value statement. There's no judgment in that. That's just an observation about the kind of sports that are going to come back quicker, and those are going to come back, if at all, much longer on the horizon in the calendar year. Find the strong leadership, find the unilateral leadership, find the one where management makes the decisions over labor, and you'll find the ones that come back first.
Anytime, Leonard.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to the Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.